I'd like to welcome everyone today to our audio conference workshop entitled Ethics and Social Work Practice, Evangelism, Prayer, Value Conflicts, and Other Issues in the Ethical Integration of Personal Beliefs and Professional Practice. This will be presented by David Sherwood, Editor of Social Work and Christianity and Professor of Social Work at Baylor University. Dr. Sherwood is also a member of the Commission on Accreditation of the Council on Social Work Education. Today's audio conference will explore the use as well as limits of the Social Work Code of Ethics and biblical teachings to resolve ethical dilemmas, identify ethical principles that guide social work practice in regard to spirituality and religion, and assess and use spiritual and religious resources in practice with clients. So without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speaker, David Sherwood.
Hi, this is David again. Obviously, from the introduction, there's a very tall order that we'll do the best we can to cover as much of it as we can. And we'll use the PowerPoint presentation as a kind of outline, and we'll see how well we can move through this, and if there are particular places we might need to linger and try to expand a little bit more, do that. But if you're looking at the PowerPoint, we'll start with slide number 2. The first one is just a title page. And so the statement here, if you can see it, is integration of faith and practice is easy to misunderstand. And so I start by saying it's not a couple of things, at least in my opinion. It's not a uniquely Christian form of social work. And I would also say that it is not learning how to impose our beliefs and values on clients or to evangelize. Now, that may sound like kind of a loaded way to say it, but these are some of the stereotypes, I think, that some people have, and you use an expression like integration of faith and practice, that somehow this is something that just Christians do, and that it involves learning how to surreptitiously evangelize or to impose values. And so I'm trying to say up front that I don't believe that that's what it's about at all. The next slide, we're on slide 3 now, I guess. Integration of faith and practice, I think, has at least 3 different senses. And at least in my opinion, all social workers, regardless of their beliefs, whether they're Christian or not, whether they believe in God or not, should be doing the first 2. In other words, yes, I believe that atheists should be integrating their faith and practice in an ethical and an appropriate way. And that few social workers, including few Christians, will likely be doing the third kind of integration that I'm thinking about. So now we're on to the next slide, which is slide 4, I guess. So kind of the first big statement, integration of faith and practice, I think in its most basic meaning, is the critical understanding of how our own beliefs, whatever they are, our own values, whatever they are, and worldview, whatever it is, and how that affects our professional perceptions and actions. So that's why I say that even if you don't believe in God, that is a form of worldview, that is a belief system, that is a type of faith. And you need to be thinking about how you integrate that in an ethical and appropriate way in your work with people. So I guess that kind of tips my hand up front as a very significant aspect of where I'm coming from. You know, we use words like professional use of the self, and this we're now on to slide 5, I guess. That the idea that there's something that we do in social work and other helping professions, that it's not just technique, it's not just technology, it's not just information, but our self is kind of the vehicle through which all of this gets embodied and related and accomplished. And so when we're dealing with issues of spirituality and religion or values and ethics, it's the same thing. This is not something different. This is a normal part of the process. Now I'm going to some subheads under this, and I don't know whether that's a different slide for you guys or not. It's still number 5, basically. I'm saying that there's no such thing as value-free or objective social workers. Now, back in the 1970s, I got my MSW, that was kind of the party line. That was what I was taught, that social workers should be value-free and that we should be objective, and that, you know, that really, certainly our values, but really values in general, were not something that we were supposed to be messing with, or that certainly spirituality and religion was not something we should be, quote, messing with as far as our social work practice is concerned. What I'm saying is that there's no such thing as a value-free or objective social workers. We all have values, and they always impact the way we perceive and practice. So I'm saying that the only question is, how do we deal with these values and these assumptions, these beliefs, in an ethical and a competent way? And this applies across the board. I'm arguing that this is not a Christian endeavor exclusively, or for someone who is has spiritual beliefs, particular religious beliefs, but it is an issue for all social workers regardless. Okay, moving to the next point here, that and this applies to whether I'm dealing with clients who are similar to me or with clients who are possibly radically different from me. The same thing still applies. Okay, next slide, number 6, I guess. As we think about what critical self-awareness involves, at least for me, I think about what are some of my core beliefs and values and assumptions. We use the word or expression sometimes worldview. What are my basic assumptions, basic beliefs about what kind of a universe this is? Why should some things be done and some things not be done? Or is there any guidance along those kinds of lines? Or are values completely subjective, completely relative, completely culturally conditioned? These are the kinds of things that all of us carry around with us, no matter who we are, and that it's very important for us to be aware of these and how they shape the way we interpret the world around us, how they affect the way we interpret what our clients are doing or saying at the same time. So, subhead under that, how do they affect my work with clients? These beliefs, these basic assumptions that I take for granted, or that kind of set the parameters of the kind of perceptions that I have, that I make. And as I've already indicated, these can be spiritual, religious, ideological, or theoretical for that matter. The expression meta-narrative, kind of fancy way of saying a big story, the big story that we use to make sense out of our experience of life. For myself, I am a Christian. I identify myself as a Christian. And so as a Christian, I identify with I have a big meta-narrative that I use to make sense out of my experience of the world, that there's a big story starting biblically in the Old Testament and going through the New Testament that I see my story as a part of, and that bigger story out there shapes and gives meaning, as I understand, my small story within that. And I'm suggesting that there's no one who's exempt from this. We all have stories, meta-narratives, that we use to make sense out of our experience of life. And that story might be a Christian one. It might be an Islamic one. It might be a materialist, naturalistic one that says, you know, there's nothing exists beyond the physical, and that there is no purpose or meaning. We kind of discover ourselves with the ability to have sensory impressions and so forth, and we respond to those, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's a meta-narrative, or a part of a narrative about what kind of a universe this is, what is real, what is not real, what has value, or what value means. And I'm suggesting that all of us need to be very much engaged in trying to understand that. Next slide. Hello, my name is David, and I'm a Christian. That sounds like the beginning of an AA meeting. Well, and I'm not saying that we should greet all of our clients with that kind of an introduction, but in a certain kind of a sense, I guess maybe I almost am, that certainly for ourselves, and we think about informed consent, you know, when we work with people, well, we at least need to be aware that I am David and I'm a Christian, and how does that affect how I understand and work with people. Or I'm a Buddhist, or I'm an agnostic, or I'm a logical positivist, or I'm a behaviorist. So, or I'm a liberal Democrat, or I'm a truly conservative Republican, a real Republican, or for that matter, I'm a real Christian, as opposed to some others that I might name. The next slide, this is number 8, I guess. This is a quotation that I've gotten secondhand. This is Jeff Galper. Some of you may recognize that name. He taught social work at Temple University for a number of years, well-known writer, social activist, and so on. Lawrence Ressler tells the story about his experience as a student in Jeff's classes at Temple University back, I guess, in the 70s, sometime back there, maybe not quite that long ago. But he said that Galper came into class the first day and announced this. He said, "I'm a Marxist and I teach from a Marxist perspective." And, that's, whoa, can you do that? Can he say that? Yeah, I mean, can he be ethical and competent and do such a thing? Well, my response is, well, it depends. Maybe. Maybe he's being more ethical than if he didn't come in and say that. Because he was a Marxist and he did teach from a Marxist perspective. And, it did help to understand that. Now then, was he ethical or not? That depends. Just as it would be if I were to announce to my class at Baylor University, I'm David and I'm a Christian and I teach from a Christian perspective. I do. But am I ethical in the way I do that, or am I unethical? Well, that remains to be seen. And that's how do you do that? So a test I would suggest is, how conscientious was he in not imposing this view on his students? Was it possible to be in his class and not to be a Marxist, or not to accept a Marxist interpretation and still get an okay grade or even a good grade? Be treated respectfully? Was he able to accept, permit, or even facilitate disagreement in his classes? Those are the questions that would tell me whether or not he was being competent and ethical, not whether or not he had a worldview and whether or not it affected the way he taught. We all have worldviews, and they always affect the way we teach or practice.